This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome back to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be on shareholders' agreements for businesses, why they are so important. I'm joined by Senior Barrister Tim Sampson from Lamb Chambers. Tim is the head of the construction team at his chambers and he regularly acts in complex disputes with significant technical or expert evidential issues, including adjudications, high court enforcement proceedings, as well as leading in the Court of Appeal. He also has substantial experience in relation to mediation and alternative dispute resolution. Tim, once again, thank you so much for joining me today.
Hattie, it's always good to be back.
Yes, it's always good to be back and give people lots and lots of stuff that can help them through life. But with over 5.6 million private sector businesses in the UK, business is rife. Many people set up a company with people they know, whether colleagues, family or friends, with established relationships that are assumed to be trusting and solid. Therefore, the idea of legally formalising the relationship with a shareholders agreement can seem unnecessary and to some, even an uncomfortable subject to discuss. No matter what your business is and how strong your ties are, you and your business may experience tough times and disagreements can occur between you and the trusted people that you've added to your business as a shareholder. Without a shareholders agreement in place, you could risk damaging your relationship and your business, and you may end up fighting a costly and stressful legal battle. In today's episode, Tim and I will be bringing you jargon-free conversation on what a shareholders agreement is all about, top tips on what to look out for when getting one drawn up, and why having one in place is so important. Tim, can we start by explaining what is meant by a shareholders agreement, please?
A shareholders agreement is, as it says, it's the agreement between the owners of the company, the shareholders, as to the running of the company. Now, you'd appreciate the company is owned by the shareholders. It's run day to day by the directors, who may well be the same people. But as a matter of law, there is a very clear distinction between the owner of a company and the people who are entitled to run the company. Now, when you set up your company, you normally have your memorandum of association, articles of association. Those are basically the rules. They're very standard. They're published on Companies House website when you register your company. But you may want to have above that and alongside it an agreement as to the running of the company between the owners that falls outside the standard memorandum that you would normally register. And one of the important things to remember about shareholder agreements is they're private. That doesn't get published on Companies House website. So you can have your own arrangements with your fellow shareholders that don't appear on a public register.
Yes, now I get it. I mean, does it automatically mean then that a shareholder will be a legal owner of the business? So, you know, people that are perhaps considering to become a shareholder of a business, and we're talking about, you know, people in small to medium-sized businesses, will they be a legal owner by having shares?
Yes, a shareholder means just that. You have an interest, the best way to look at it, in the company. The company itself is a legal entity in its own right. You have a little bit of it as a shareholder. So if you go onto Companies House website, you will see a list of members that is published. And those are the shareholders, they're the owners. But as I explained at the outset, the owners don't run the company day to day, and they have no direct interest in the company itself. The company is a separate, standalone legal body. You have certain rights to things from the company, like dividends or money if the company is wound up and there's a distribution of assets. but that's what it means to be the owner of a company.
Okay, so shareholders' agreements could also provide sort of the framework for other contractual documentation, can't it? So the shareholders may wish to put in place, I don't know, such as service agreements, arrangements in relation to intellectual property ownership and stuff like that. That they're obviously useful to have in shareholders' agreements, right? Anything that determines and defines what it is and what bit of it is you own.
Well, it is particularly if, let's say, there's a coming together of individuals to set up a company that they may have different things they're bringing to the company. For example, I want to set up a company that is going to exploit some intellectual property right. I, on one hand, have the intellectual property rights. I've got the copyrights or whatever it is. I agree to put them in the company. The other owner of the company says, actually, well, my skills are really in marketing and accountancy. And that's what they bring to the table. But obviously, if you're going to have that sort of arrangement, that sits outside the operation of the company itself, the day-to-day operation that the Mem and Arts deal with. Because you may say, well, I've put in my copyright rights, and therefore I want certain financial rights to attach to my shares that are going to be different to yours as a shareholder who brought something else to the table. Now, this is where we get to this issue of different classes of shares and a way of attaching rights to them.
So A class and B class shares. And this has been a confusing thing for many people. And actually, I remember thinking, what's the difference between an A class and a B class share? Let's talk about that, Tim.
Right. Well, obviously, a share is just a share. It's an entitlement and interest in the company. It makes you a member of a club. But attaching to a share, you can have all sorts of other rights. A right to vote at certain meetings. Your votes can be weighted, so A shares can have more weight in particular circumstances than B shares. But your B shares then may have a right to dividends ahead of the A share owner.
And you can make that specific in the shareholders' agreement, can't you? You can say, right, these B class shares will also have these rights to them, and they can be unique to the agreement that you have.
Well, class rights can be dealt with either by attaching them to the share itself, or through shareholders' agreement. Certain rights are much better attached to the share, and that will then appear in the company rules, as it were, the Mem and Arts. So, for example, if it's a right to a dividend in a particular way, that could appear in either one, either category, either a class right or shareholder agreement. But veto rights, for example, the way the company is run, are more importantly attached to the share. Because let's say you want to transfer the share on to somebody else. You want to make sure that the rights that go with that share are transferred with it. Whereas, of course, anything in the shareholder agreement is personal between the shareholders who signed it.
Right. So let's just clarify that. The class of share that you own is going to determine how much control you can have over the company, or say you can have. Your shareholders agreement is something that will say how many shares you have. Two separate things.
Not just how many, but also you could attach rights to it. For example, the books for the company may say there are 100 ordinary shares. Shareholder A has 50 shares. Shareholder B has 50 shares. That's all you see.
Right.
Two owners, 50-50 on the 100 issued shares.
But one's A class, one's B class.
Ah, then you could say between ourselves as shareholders, shareholder A has certain rights and shareholder B has certain rights, but that doesn't appear in the company records. It's only in our agreement.
Yes.
You can put it in the company rules and says that actually shareholder A shares have certain rights and shareholder B shares. So you can do it either way. So it's important to understand what you're getting. Are you getting ordinary shares with no particular rights attached, but there's an agreement behind the scenes as to how your real rights operate? Or are the shares themselves specifically defined to have certain rights
attached to them
that go with the shares? So it's important to understand the distinction between a shareholder agreement, which is simply a contract between the owners as to how they might deal with the ownership rights, and the class rights, which are baked into the shareholding itself.
That is so crucial, Tim, because, you know, when people say I own shares in a company, and if their understanding is that their shares gives them a right, for example, to vote on the management, or to be have a big, you know, a say in how the companies run and what's going on. But actually, their class of their share or their agreement, their shareholders' agreement in this case, since we're talking about specifically shareholders' agreement, does not give them that right. That changes everything.
Well, it does. People think because they have an ownership right through shares that they actually have some sort of day-to-day controlling right in the company. It's one thing that I think we're going to be coming on to, but I'll just flag it now. That one of the more important things for minority shareholders to have, either they get an agreement with the other shareholders that they're entitled to be a director or appoint a director.
Or whatever it is that they are going to agree to do. So that's the key, isn't it? In your shareholders agreement, list out what it is you will be entitled to do as a result of your share ownership.
Yes. If all you're getting is 50 ordinary shares, they attach nothing more than a tiny right to ownership within the company that runs under the Companies Act. That doesn't mean you've got any say day-to-day in how the company runs. If you want to have a day-to-day say in it, you've either got to have a shareholders agreement that gives it to you, or you have a shareholders agreement that lets you be appointed as a director, or you insist that the class of shares that you have allows you to do those things.
Yes.
One or the other, but don't just think, oh, I own shares, therefore I've got rights in the company. You don't. You have a right to certain things in the company, mainly dividends and distributions. But beyond that, you get no say at all.
And that's where the biggest myths on this subject lies, where lots of people do think that because they own shares, they have a right to how the company is run, or they have the say if the company should be sold or not be sold, or grow or not grow. And this is why I think this podcast is incredibly useful for those people that do want to understand a bit more on this topic. But okay, so if you've got a shareholders agreement and you fall out with the other shareholders or shareholder, how could that damage or protect the business, particularly protect each shareholder against any liability or perhaps wrongdoing of the business? So those people that are, you know, thinking, well, if I'm a shareholder and then the people that are running it are negligent, or they do something wrong, or they borrow money and don't pay it back, could a shareholders agreement protect you, or will it potentially not protect you at all?
Well, I think there's really two questions that are rolled into one there. The first part was really to do with if you've got a shareholder agreement, you fall out with the other shareholders, what do you do that will damage or protect the interests of the company? Now, often what you'll find is you have small companies, you've got something called a deadlock. I own 50% of the shares, you own 50% of the shares, you're one of the directors, I'm one of the directors, that's it. So on every level, everything balances out.
And equal.
So you can stymie the company doing anything. That shouldn't happen, because obviously if you get to deadlock, nothing can work. But of course it does protect one party from the other going completely mad and doing something they shouldn't be doing. You can say, no. I, as a director, say you can't do that, and I say, as a shareholder, you can't do that. That's it. But you may need to have provisions for breaking the deadlock. But as between shareholders, that's quite difficult, unless you have put it into an agreement as to how you might resolve a deadlock position. For example, you might provide for a third party to have some sort of say. It may not do it. You have to think up what works for the company.
Yes.
There isn't an automatic way. In particular, for example, if a director's board is deadlocked, the chairman normally has the right and casting votes. So whoever is voted as chairman of the meeting can actually break the deadlock. Shareholders can't do that. It's not how a shareholder meeting works.
Interesting.
There's no break clause for the chairman anymore. So you need to have within the structure of the shareholders agreement some way of breaking a deadlock if you have it. But also, and we'll come on to this a little bit later, if you have between the shareholders an agreement as to how the company is going to be run, you shouldn't get to deadlock anyway, because you should refer to the shareholders agreement and say, no, we can't do that, or the company isn't going to do that because we've already agreed that it won't be doing that in the shareholders agreement. Not in terms of the company rules, the mem and arts, but as between you and me, we've said, no, we're going to run a mushroom farm. Now you want to invest in gold mines in South Africa. That's not what the company's here to do. We know it isn't. What we're doing is something what we agreed to do at the outset. You know, you want to borrow £1 million. Well, we actually agreed between the shareholders the company would never borrow more than £100,000.
Yes, yes.
There's no deadlock here. You've agreed we won't be doing this. If necessary, I can enforce the shareholders agreement as a contract against you.
Interesting.
Whereas the Memon Arts are a set of rules that operate through the Companies Act, which are, yes, you have certain rights as a shareholder, as a minority shareholder, unfairly prejudicial claims, but you don't really want to be going down the route of claims against fellow shareholders as to how the company's been run. You can't run a company like that.
Okay. Second part of that question, particularly protect each shareholder against liabilities wrongdoing. Can a shareholders agreement protect you against the company or any wrongdoing?
Right. Okay. As you appreciate, limited liability companies are just that. The shareholders are not directly responsible for the debts of the company, unless they're using the company in a vehicle of some sort of fraud.
I've had so many questions on that. So many people have asked questions and said, but if I own shares, then I'm liable for what that company is doing.
No, as a director, you're liable for what the company is doing. You've got to remember that the director, for example, the company goes into hideous debt and it should have stopped trading, and it continues to trade and incurs more debt. That's wrongful trading. The directors can become personally responsible for that additional debt because they should have stopped trading when they realised the company was insolvent.
Because they're making all the decisions as the director of the company, as a shareholder. Yes.
No. The shareholder is responsible for the capital they put into the company. So you've got 100 £1 shares, as long as you've paid your £100 to the company.
Or whatever amount you agree to pay for your shares, yeah.
But they're normally 100 £1 shares.
Yes.
Well, paid up capital is all your liability to the company. But obviously, of course, if the company is badly run, you lose a company that may be worth really millions of pounds, and your shareholding is worthless. So what you want is to make sure the company is not being badly run in the first place as a shareholder.
Yes.
So you might have the shareholder agreement and making sure that the company, although this should be done by the directors anyway, but the shareholders also then agree. It'll have insurance. It complies with legal obligations. It keeps books of account. It gets audited. The things that should be happening are happening, and the shareholders between themselves can insist on it. Now, one of the other really important things you can bring to a shareholder agreement called visitation rights. As a director, you're entitled to go anywhere in the company, see anything, see any books, see any contracts, investigate bank accounts, whatever it is you need to understand for the running
of the company. As the director.
And of course, if your fellow directors prevent you from running the company effectively, you're obliged to resign and tell Companies House why. But as a shareholder, you have no rights to visit the company premises, see the factory go around the shops.
That's extraordinary.
But as a shareholder who is not a director, you would certainly want to have access to things like the company books, accounts, audits that are being done, because otherwise you're going to be left relying.
But I would have thought you would have been allowed to do that anyway. I think it's extraordinary that you can't.
No, shareholders don't have access to these. They only own the company. They're not responsible for it day to day.
Yes.
But if you as a shareholder want to have access, let's say, to a monthly statement of account of the company,
but you should be able to get access. Well, mind you, you've got company accounts are filed in Companies House, so you can get a certain amount of it in any event, no matter who you are. But I would have thought as a shareholder, you would be able to get a little bit more as standard. But what you're saying is if you've got visitation rights incorporated in your shareholders agreement, you can have more access to more things than the average Joe outsider who's going to go in Companies House and take a look, for example.
Yes, and as you appreciate, you look at the standard accounts filed with Companies House. A, it tells you what the company was doing more than a year ago, and B, they're very limited. It's basically a balance sheet.
Well, you can have abbreviated accounts filed, which probably doesn't have much on them at all. So top three reasons why a company should have a shareholders agreement, please, Tim.
Right. Actually, I thought of five.
Yes. Please, give us five. I like that. Top five reasons.
You need to stop companies falling into deadlock that can't be resolved, where you've got a balance of shareholder and director rights just cancel each other out. You need some mechanism to make sure the company has the ability to run when you can't actually sit around a table and agree. Second thing, it protects minority shareholder interests in the day-to-day running of the company. if, as a minority shareholder, you're not a director, you might want to have veto rights or some mechanism preventing your interests being trampled on by the majority.
Yes.
You might want to have an interest, for example, less in running the company, but more actually in receiving dividends. So your minority interests might be in the money, but whatever it is, you want to be able to protect it. The best way to protect it is through shareholder agreement. It also, shareholder agreements mean you don't end up falling back on the old unfair prejudice petitions. They're now under Section 994 of the Companies Act. Because, as I said, there's no way to run a company. You can't continually threaten each other with legal action. The other thing that people forget is that also shareholder agreements can be put in place to protect the interests of the company.
Yes.
Shareholders are not like directors. Directors have to use utmost good faith in promoting the interests of the company. They must avoid conflicts. They can't get a secret profit out of the company for themselves. Shareholders are not bound by those obligations because they're merely owners. They don't run the company. So you may wish with your fellow shareholders to have a parallel set of agreements, which actually mean the shareholders take on some of that burden as well. They won't compete with the company. They will promote the interests of the company in a way that a director would. And the other thing that we haven't touched on, but it is important, is the transfer of shares within a private company. Because obviously there's no open market for shares in a limited liability company, not like a PLC where you just trade your shares on an open market.
That is really important. And, you know, most people don't think about that because you think about the beginning and you think about what's happening now. But I think it's very important to think about what happens when you say, I want to cash out, I want to sell them on, or I don't wish to be a shareholder anymore, whether they've got value or not. What happens? Who has the say as to who they can be passed on to, how, what they're worth? Big point, Matt.
That is critical, and it can only be dealt with in a shareholders agreement. It's not part of the Mermen Arts tool. So, for example, if you own half the company or a quarter of the company, you decide, actually, I want to sell my shares. It may be the other shareholders say, well, actually, we don't want these shares disappearing off to somebody we don't know. We want a preemption right. So if you're going to sell your shares, you have to offer them to the current shareholders first at a value to be determined by Mr. X or Miss Y, who are professional valuers. Or there may be a list of people to whom you can sell shares, but other people who are not allowed to have shares.
And I think that's really important for the business owners, actually. So, yes, it kind of felt like this podcast was more lenient to the shareholder, the person holding the shares. But actually, this point is bang on for the owner of the business, because the last thing you want is to have a shareholder, great. But then they say, I'm going to sell them to somebody who's going to be the highest bidder. You might not like that person. You might not know that person. You might not want the shares to go to that person. But this is equally important for the director. If you set these things out in your agreement from the off, what happens in a disagreement? What steps can be taken? Is it mediation? Is it alternative dispute resolution? Is it that everybody can run off to court, which should be the last thing that needs to happen? How are you going to resolve disputes? What access to the company can the shareholder get or not get? How are they going to be paid? In terms of dividends, are they going to be paid? And what happens if they want to sell them? These are really, really key things, Tim.
Well, particularly on that last point, remember, minority shareholders may have class rights that entitle them to appoint a director. So you may end up, if someone could just freely sell their shares on.
And let me just clarify that, because that's actually, it makes me laugh, because I think, God, could you imagine the amount of scenarios where people are not aware that could be the case. So your shareholder could have the rights to appoint a director in the business, right? Which means you could be ousted.
Well, you could end up having a situation within the board of directors where you've got someone you really don't want in the company, but they have the right to be appointed because they've got the shareholding right that says they can. So
no matter how small their shareholding may be.
Control of
very interesting.
And also in class rights, you've got to get this sorted out. And the one thing I'll pick up on just at the end, you talked about entering this the shareholder agreement before the company gets going. That is vital, because one thing I can guarantee you will never be able to achieve is you get to a situation where something's gone wrong and then try and get a shareholder agreement in place, because there's no chance of it being agreed. So if you're going to set up a company with a shareholder agreement, get it in at the outset.
Yes.
It's far too late when things have gone wrong.
No, and I think just to add to that, that yes, absolutely, when things have gone wrong, it's not going to be a good time to sit there and try and put an agreement together, because people are already at that point of disagreement. However, if you haven't got one in place, a shareholders agreement with your shareholders now, and everything's okay, this is also a good time to go and get a shareholders agreement drawn up, because you're still not, and hopefully never will be, at the point of dispute where people are having problems.
Well, yes, because although there are mechanisms under the Companies Act and under the Insolvency Act for dealing with companies that are deadlocked, they can't agree, they can't move things forward, the ultimate sanction is the company is just wound up, the money's distributed to the shareholders, and that's it, it's all over. But that is a bit of a final solution type scenario where there's nothing left for the shareholders.
Yes.
They just get their money and they walk away, when actually what they really want is to promote the company going forward.
No,
but because
absolutely,
they can't agree on how it's to be done, and there's no mechanism to get it done, all that could happen is the company is just broken up and sold off.
Absolutely. I think one of the key takeaways is if you do not have a shareholders agreement in place, you leave yourself open for issues to creep in and people and to begin arguments, disputes, legal fees potentially, as I said right at the outset. This, a shareholders agreement is to be fair and square and to discuss what they mean, what the value of them is, how they're sold, what the rights of the shareholder is and is not as well, and how disputes can be dealt with if there are any. So that's great, and that's all we've got time for. I see you looking at the clock, Tim.
I was amazed how quickly the time flies.
It does. I mean, it does go really quickly, but this is it. What we try to do is give really key, punchy stuff and information that people can benefit from. So, Tim, thank you so much for your time again.
Well, my pleasure, Hattie, as always.
And what I'll say to our listeners is don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcast. And you can find us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and YouTube by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you for listening.